Greetings, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that unquestionably challenges you to think outside the box of convention and to explore with me and my great guests the many other possibilities available in the free thought zone. That's where we will journey to today during the program. Everything is available to us. No holding back. We are not mainstream. We are the alternative truth, and thank you for being part of that truth. So stay tuned. Here we go. Get ready for another hour of out there information. And we have landed. This is Patricia Corey, your host for another exciting, I hope for you, exciting, it certainly will be for me, hour of radio. And my guest today, oh boy, I just love this woman. This is a highly qualified person. So if you are interested in what is going on with the ET UFO abduction situation currently and before, you are tuned in at the right moment, because I have today the wonderful Kathleen Martin. She's going to get all embarrassed now and say I over-promoted her, but really, this is a woman who is a prominent UFO abduction researcher. She's an author, a lecturer, 23 years experience in the field. She is MUFON's director of abduction research, so we're talking qualified. For 10 years, Kathy volunteered as MUFON's director of field investigation training, and then in 2012, she was the recipient of MUFON's Researcher of the Year Award. She's also a certified hypnotherapist. Now, I just, without reading more of her incredible gifts, I do want to say that I had first introduction to Kathy way back when I was bringing forward the information about Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience, which still is a very important part of my own personal growth. So I'm going to ask her to take us back to that moment first, and then we'll go forward with her wonderful new book, which I've been fortunate to get in time for this interview, and I'm reading voraciously. Here we go. I'll stop here and let Kathy come in so we don't waste any more time. Hello, Kathleen Martin.
Hello, Pat.
Thank you for coming back on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be back.
Thank you. Well, I'm sitting here holding your new book, The Alien Abduction Files, which we're going to definitely get into. And, you know, I'm very interested in you telling us about how you managed to get abduction discussed in Vanity Fair. So that is a coup. Talk about getting the information to the mainstream. Vanity Fair? Boy, we'll have to get to that. We'll get back to it. Let's start back, just so that the people who are not familiar with you, let's start back with my first encounter with you, the Betty and Barney Hill situation, and a reminder that how I first found out about that was that I met the psychiatrist. His name was Bernie something.
Dr. Benjamin Simon.
That's him. I was there, wherever it was, Boston, I think. I was working for a company that did investment seminars, and he was in the audience. And we just clicked in the back of the room. We started talking. We clicked, and the next thing he said, he was telling me about, I don't know, we made that leap. And he said, well, you should come to my office. We can talk about it. And I walked into his, I did. I followed up and went to his studio. And there was my first encounter with a rubber or a plastic gray ET the size of a small building. He had modeled this figure.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it was the first time I ever saw anything like that. It was full size. And it was, as we were sitting there talking to me, this gray was looking back at me. It was quite an interesting encounter. So at any rate, Betty Hill was your aunt.
That is correct. She was my mother's oldest sister, 10 years older than my mother. And I was 13 when Betty called my mother to tell her that she and my Uncle Barney had had a close encounter with a UFO in New Hampshire's White Mountains the previous evening. Betty was concerned because the craft had come so close to them that she was afraid they had been contaminated. It hovered only about 100 feet above them. My uncle had gotten out of the car. He had observed what he described as non-humans aboard the craft. This was part of his conscious recall. They made their way home after they heard a series of beeping or buzzing sounds on the trunk of the car. Later, they would discover shiny spots on the trunk in that same location that caused a compass needle to spin and spin, indicating that there was a strong magnetic field around there. When they arrived home, they also discovered that Betty's dress that had been in fine shape the day before was torn in several locations. Later, a pink powdery substance grew on the dress, and it has been examined at 5 separate scientific laboratories with anomalous results at every laboratory. No one has ever been able to reproduce that effect or to identify what that pink powder was.
Wow.
Barney's.
Go ahead.
Okay. The tops of Barney's best shoes were so deeply scraped he had to purchase new shoes. Their watches had stopped working. There were many, many keys or clues that something more than just a sighting had occurred. Betty and Barney remembered.
I just want to interject here that I remember you speaking about these bubbles of paint on the car, and I found that extremely fascinating. It was like the some heat force had just brought up the paint, no?
No, it wasn't a bubble. It was a highly polished, shiny spot, several of them, on the trunk of the car, as if a template had been laid down and lacquer had been sprayed in that spot. Only, you know, it wasn't bumpy. It was smooth.
So when was that? When was that now? We're talking the 60s, weren't we?
We're talking about September 19, 1961. And I went down to Betty's and Barney's house within a couple of days from the time this happened and saw the evidence, saw the spots on the trunk of the car, even felt them with my finger.
You had that had to be such an incredible experience for such a young girl at a time when we were not having these conversations.
Absolutely. It was incredible for me.
Was your experience one of fear or intrigue?
It was intrigue at first until I realized that my aunt and uncle had been abducted, that they had this 2-hour period of missing time. They had all of this evidence, and it could only point to one thing in my mind.
And that was?
And that was alien abduction, that, you know, that they were taken, that something occurred during that 2-hour period that they couldn't remember, which they later remembered in hypnosis with Dr. Benjamin Simon separately.
Yeah, and he managed to work with them hypnotically separately, and they both came up with the same stories.
Absolutely.
Did they have other experiences, or was that just the one big banana?
Betty and Barney did have other sightings, and I believe that after Barney's death in 1969, Betty did have other encounters, although she would never state that she did. She believed that she had not. But I saw evidence, and I've read all of her files, and I don't think that that UFO, for example, that came down and flew next to her car while she was driving between my grandmother's house and her home one night, and she had a passenger in the car. I don't think that UFO that came down and shot a beam into that vehicle did so just to say hello. I suspect that she was taken again. I've had other reports of she was with another person and they were driving through the same area and the car felt like it was being lifted up into the air and then it was set down a few miles down the road. Doesn't sound to me like it was just the craft giving Betty a little lift and putting her back. I think that something else occurred.
And that same thing you've described in the new book happening to the husband of Denise Stoner, who co-authored the new book with you, right?
Yes, to Denise, her husband, and their 14-year-old daughter at the time. This was in 1982, that their first missing time experience occurred.
Before we get on to that, I would like to also remind people that you co-authored this book with the wonderful Stanton Friedman, who is somebody I really respect. And this man has the credentials of being a nuclear physicist, among other things. So how did Stanton become involved in telling that story with you, the Betty and Barney Hill story?
Well, I had written most of the book. I had been researching it for 14 years at that point with my aunt. She had turned all of her files over to me, 40 years worth of investigation files, all of the original reports, letters to and from scientists. I had gone to the site along the close encounter route over and over again, interviewed Betty many, many times, had transcribed the hypnosis tapes for comparative analysis, and it came down to the star map. And I knew that if I took the time to begin investigating the star map research, it would take me far longer to write this book than I wanted to take. So I was impressed with Stan's credentials. I knew that he was the first to publish on the star map, that he was very involved in the vetting of Marjorie Fish's work. She was the brilliant woman from Ohio who did the research on Betty's star map and identified the home base as being Zeta Reticuli. And so I presented a proposal to Stanton Friedman and asked him if he would like to participate in the writing of the book. He came down to my house. I was living in New Hampshire at the time, spent a few days with us, and looked over what I had written to date and all of my files, and he agreed to vet my work for accuracy and also to write a couple of chapters in the book, which he ended up doing.
So for those who are not aware of the star map, which is so, you know, such a, you know, I really recommend to people that they read this magnificent book, Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. It's not a new book, but it's an important book, especially this information about the star map. Can you just give us an overview, basically, of what how that came about and how Betty presented that to the world?
I'd be happy to. The star map was first drawn as a post-hypnotic suggestion by Dr. Benjamin Simon to Betty during the spring of 1964. And he told her that she would be able to draw it if and only if she could remember it accurately. And it didn't trouble her too much to do that. So she drew it, and it ended up being published in the first book that was written about their case, The Interrupted Journey by John G. Fuller. And that was in the fall of 1966 when it was published.
But can I interrupt you a moment?
Sure.
Excuse me for interrupting. But it wasn't that Benjamin placed that idea in her hypnotic state. She had some kind of recall, as I remember, of having been shown a map, right?
Yes, Betty was. Yes, I should. I'm sorry. I'll clarify that more. When Betty was on the craft, it was Barney's turn to be examined. The examiner left her alone in the examining room with the leader, the one she called the leader, that we now call the escort. And she said to him, after she realized that she had lost some of her fear of him, she said, "I know you're not from around here. Where are you from?" And So quite an understatement. And so he produced a three-dimensional star map. She stated that it was almost like looking out a window, or it was almost like she was looking at a holographic image. And so that is how she recalled this under hypnosis, and that is why Dr. Simon suggested that she would draw it. So she did go home. She drew that star map, and then, of course, Marjorie Fish saw it in The Interrupted Journey. She was a brilliant woman from Ohio and an amateur astronomer who was working as a school teacher at the time. She was skeptical about the map, but she thought if such a place existed in our galaxy, she might be able to find it. So she started to do research on this. In order to get the accurate distance data, she had to go to the university, and she had to sit in the astronomy department using their catalogs and hand copy all of the distance data. There were no photocopying machines back then. Then she took the data back home, and she started to construct three-dimensional models using beads of various sizes and colors and monofilament line. Those were about 2 feet by 3 feet. And so what she ended up with in the end was she had built 26 different three-dimensional models seeking a pattern for Betty's star map, but it took her 4 years to find a match. She originally thought that she would find many matches, but in the end, there was only one. And she didn't find it until 1972. In one of these maps that she had constructed, she had 256 stars in their proper three-dimensional location. Imagine the math that, that she had to do.
It's almost unimaginable that a person could have constructed such a thing without any of the technology of today. Looking at you know, astrology maps of star, it's just phenomenal. It's such a statement to the human drive to understand beyond our limitations.
Absolutely. And I say she was a brilliant woman. She was a member of Mensa. She was very, I have to say, she really persevered in doing this.
Indeed. You know, and I wanted to say that I was reminded of this story that you told so long ago when I saw the film K-Pax, which I'm sure you've seen, with Kevin Spacey.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, let me turn you on. There's this wonderful film called K-Pax with Kevin Spacey, where he's picked up. This man appears in the middle of the city, and he's picked up as a vagrant, and he's says he's from outer space, from a place called K-Pax. So they take him to a mental institution. And to make a very long story short, the audience is never quite sure if this guy is in fact an alien or if he's crazy. And you're left with that question all the way through the film. But at a certain point, he speaks with such clarity to the psychiatrist, who is Jeff Bridges, great actor, that they take him to this astronomy center where he's asked to, if he's really from K-Pax, show us the star system. And they've got like a planetarium. So they put some stars on this three-dimensional representation they put onto the ceiling. And he goes over and he starts to draw on the computer. He draws the star system with all these different planes and all this complexity, and it fits right into the to what they were showing. And to make a very long story short, he identifies this unknown star system through his drawing. And I was just reminded of when I saw that movie, which you've really got to see, and all of you who are listening, if you haven't seen K-Pax, I really recommend it. It's K-PAX. I was reminded of you and that amazing story of Betty's experience with the star map.
It was amazing. And particularly since in 1972, Marjorie found the distance data for the three stars that were missing in all of those years. And then she was able to put them in to her model, and she had a perfect match for Betty's drawing. And the interesting thing is that all the stars on Betty's map were sun-like stars, although only 5% of the stars in that volume of space were sun-like.
That is really remarkable.
Nearest star to nearest star. The pattern is on a plane, so it would be easier to travel from one star to another. The base stars, Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli, are only, well, I say only, 39 light years away. Not 600 light years away like we hear.
One of our regular little blips in our connection. Nothing to worry about. We're back here again. And I'm not sure what we were talking about, Kathy. Do you remember?
Yes. I was talking about Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli.
Right. That's the line.
Marjorie Fish had identified those as the base stars on Betty's star map. And that they're 39 light years away from us, and I was saying, imagine, say those the people who live there are 1,000 years in advance of us technologically. Imagine that they might be able to travel here. That somebody is coming here. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's very exciting that we are in the generation where we are going to see, without question, we're going to see the science arrive at exposing these phenomena that are anomalies to the three-dimensional physics of Earth, but not for long. All right, I have just one other thing about Betty, and then I'd like to move on because of time. Didn't she also ask for proof from the head, what did you call him? The escort.
The leader. She called him the leader. I call him the escort.
Did she ask him and he was going to give her a book and then the others were unhappy about it, so he didn't do it?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that book it wasn't really like what we think of as a book, but it contained alien symbols. And there has recently been a scientific study that was conducted on alien symbols. And the researchers, one from McGill, one from the State University of New York, stated after their analysis that Bud Hopkins experiencers drew symbols that were remarkably alike, but very different from those drawn by the control group. Those symbols were then compared to Betty's symbols that no one had seen until 2007. This study was done in 2004. And what the researchers discovered is that Betty's symbols were nearly identical to those of Bud's experiences.
But if only she had had that book. I mean, as I recall, he was going to give it to her, but then his crew made it so that he decided not to do it. Had he done that, and she'd had that physical evidence, it would be a very different world today, don't you agree?
Oh, I do agree. It would have been a wonderful thing. And the guy who took it away from her was one of those little 3-foot-tall guards who have the responsibility of making sure that no one gets off an alien craft with anything that doesn't belong to them.
Yeah, too bad. I hope that changes soon. All right, before we're going to go to a short break in a moment, but I would like to remind everyone that you're listening. My guest today is Kathleen Martin. We're talking about a book that she's done some time ago, Betty and Bill Barney Hill. Why am I not being able to announce that? Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, called Captured, which is a book that I have and really, really got a lot out of that book. And in the next half hour, we're going to be talking about her new book, The Alien Abduction Files, and how she's gotten to hear from there. So before we move on, I would like to just give you the opportunity to tell everyone where you can be reached on the web and where they can purchase the books. And then we'll cut to a break. Kathy?
Yes, hi.
Go ahead, and if you'll just announce where your website and where your books can be purchased, then we'll take a short break.
Okay. My website is Kathleen-Marden, MARDEN.com. And my email address is the letter kmarden@AOL.com.
And where can the books be purchased?
The book can be purchased at Barnes & Noble or Amazon. It can be purchased in any bookstore. It's also available in Kindle and as an ebook. And if you would like an autographed copy of the book, you can go to my website and purchase an autographed copy using PayPal.
Wonderful. All right. So in the second half an hour, we're going to be talking about this new book and your fascinating, again, story of one woman's particular recurrent abduction process of being visited. This is Denise Stoner. She's your co-author, is she?
Yes, she is.
But you're the main author of the book.
Yes, I am.
All righty. We're going to cut to break. We'll be back in just a few moments. So please tell your friends, if they're interested, to come around the computer and tune in, because we will shortly be going forward with the fascinating information in this new book. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back with Kathleen Martin. We're going to be talking about The Alien Abduction Files, her new book. The subtitle of this book is The Most Startling Cases of Human-Alien Contact Ever Reported. That's a big claim. And even though I'm a big fan, I'm going to hold her to that. So let's move into the next half hour. And I really like that. That's the most startling cases.
That was my publisher's title.
Because we know there's a lot of startling information out there. And of course, you certainly have testimony to that in your own experience with your aunt and your own experiences as a researcher. But now let's get to this book. I would like to ask you, okay, millions of people have declared abduction. The John Mack, of course, we know, the great contributor to that experience of bringing people out and talking about their trauma and their experience. Where are we now? What's happening in 2013 as far as the progression of this human experience?
Well, unfortunately, we have lost John Mack. We've lost Bud Hopkins.
Yes.
David Jacobs is still working in the field, but has been a little bit active in lecturing, and I guess in doing radio shows too. Yvonne Smith out in California is still doing her research, and Barbara Lamb and Leo Sprinkle and Daryl Sims are some
Dolores
of the common.
Cannon. Dolores Cannon.
Yes, and Dolores Cannon and myself are some of the names in the field right now. And what I'm finding and what I'm promoting, actually, is support for experiencers to come together as a group in order to talk about their own experiences and to learn from it. There is so much information that they possess. And this is one reason that I did a commonality study on UFO abduction experiencers. Denise Stoner helped me with that. And we wanted to quantify what experiencers have in common. And I think that we talked about that on our last show together.
Yes,
but
we did.
We identified 23 commonalities. So it's really important, I think, at this time for experiencers to support one another. Most people who go to an agency or an organization to ask for an investigation of their experience are really looking for support, is what I have found. And so I'm encouraging support groups to form throughout the United States. I'm an advocate for Starborn support, which started in Maine but now has several chapters around the country. We still don't have enough. John Mack was really instrumental in finding this kind of support for experiencers, but it has sort of died down and groups have stopped operating since the time of his death. So we're really promoting this again just to support experiencers, to help them along, and to help them to gain some understanding and perhaps share information about what they're being told by the ETs.
Okay. Now, one thing that I really love about Betty, of course, she had to have been some kind of a character. When you said you're not from around here much.
Right. Yeah, she was. She was a lot of laughs, I'll tell you.
Yeah, and so, you know, how wonderful that somebody with that kind of presence and strength could have been chosen to deal with this situation. And I'm just wondering, you know, how many people are we still... Of course, the majority of people are extremely traumatized and afraid by these experiences, but are you encountering also people that are having more positive experiences, that are being given information, instruction that is less traumatizing and more, let's say, with the intention of helping humankind? Are we looking at some positive developments?
Well, I can tell you that... When experiencers do join support groups, they have this support from others, they begin to learn that they don't have to be as fearful. They begin to understand knowledge is power. And when they have the knowledge of what is going on and the reasons for this, they begin to lose their fear. I mean, a lot of are still fearful, but this is something that we really have to work on, and we have to work on it together.
But when the fear goes, are they more able to bring forward information that is more than just more than being stuck in the experience and the trauma? Are they able to get past that and start to divulge some of the information that they're receiving from these beings?
Yes, because from fear, they can move on to curiosity. And I have found that many experiencers, particularly those who have been taken for a very long time, are beginning to have conscious recall of their abduction experiences. They're beginning to recall some of the information that is downloaded to them. And the details of what they're observing on the craft, what kind of procedures are being done. So we're gaining a greater understanding of all of this. And I believe that it is coming from just people being able to overcome that level of fear that left them so paralyzed.
Indeed. And of course, a lot of that comes from these traumatic interventions. And your new book with Denise delves into that question that keeps surfacing of women being impregnated and then the child or the fetus being taken. And this is probably one of the most startling aspects that your publisher was talking about. When you talk about Denise and the intervention of her being impregnated and then she loses twice. I haven't read the whole book, so it might be more times, but she's impregnated and then later she loses a fetus and then she at another time loses yet another. And then she sees this fetus in a test tube back on the ship and knows that it's hers. Am I reading that right?
Yes, I believe that you are. Denise wrote that section of the book herself. Her personal account was so powerful that I asked her to contribute that part of the book herself rather than to have me paraphrase what she had written. Her personal experience, her well-detailed memory of all of this is just incredible. And this was not recalled through hypnosis by me. I was interested primarily in her two missing time experiences. And so much of it was really just riveting. That's the word I have to say.
It's just riveting. But I'd like you to speak to the question of this hybrid, the aspect of one of the reasons, a primary reason it would appear of this phenomenon is that it appears that particularly the Zetas are working on developing a hybrid race between human DNA and their own. And in the book, which again, I haven't finished yet, but because it only got here yesterday, but I am halfway through, which is how riveting the book is, where this is clearly brought out. So in your work as a researcher and a hypnotist, have you run across this a lot, the aspect of the hybrids being developed from these people, these experiencers?
Yes, I have. Most of the women that I have worked with have mentioned observing these hybrids being grown in sort of large test tubes on board the craft.
Most of them see?
Yes, they see this on the craft.
Wow. So then there must be some reason why these beings are letting or wanting the mother to see this, these infants. What do you glean from this? They're not infants, they're fetuses.
They're fetuses at this point, and the women do believe that they are a combination of this ET DNA and human DNA. I have reason to believe that the Greys are not mammals, so I would think that if this is occurring, then it's through gene splicing of incompatible DNA. But so many people have reported this. David Jacobs did this research for many, many years, Bud Hopkins as well, Barbara Lamb as well.
And John Mack as well.
And John Mack, yes. And it's reported over and over again. I don't think that we can deny that people are observing this on craft. And they observe these hybrids in different stages of development, where there might be one stage where they're mostly gray with a little bit of human, then a middle stage where they're obviously more human and maybe half gray, and then finally in the end we have the hybrids who look nearly human or completely human. And so then there's speculation about whether or not these fetuses are being implanted in women, and they're giving birth to them and raising them. They're, you know, genetically human. The mother's and the father's gene is there. But then some of this hybrid genetic material might be there as well. And so that's very, very interesting to me.
Yeah, interesting is a nice way to call it. So in essence, the experiencer has the experience of having something, in her case, in Denise's case, she went through a process where she was on the table and she felt something being put into her womb, right?
Yes, she did. And other researchers have talked in the past about this, where the fetus is grown in an artificial womb and placed in the woman's body for a short period of time, then taken out and continues to develop in an artificial environment on the craft in one of these
cylindrical tubes. But first, one of the first encounters is they take the woman's eggs.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes,
so
and the man's eggs. Sperm.
And the man's sperm, they do the impregnation or the artificial insemination. They put this into a tube, and then the woman is brought back onto the craft, and it's reinserted, right?
That is correct.
Insemination, ET style.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's been reported over and over again. I have a man in Australia who's arguing against this, who says that the ETs are capable of inserting their consciousness into a human fetus and therefore don't have to do any of this experimentation. But he's trying to convince me of it, but I don't know. There are just so many hundreds of women who have reported seeing this. I really can't discount their testimony.
Is it hundreds or is it thousands?
Well, it could be thousands.
It seems like so many women are, when they're able to bring this forward, they experience this and the reliving of it and the trauma of it. But what I found very intriguing and upsetting is that they are brought back onto the craft and shown the fetus. And in your book, Denise says she knew somehow which one was hers.
Yes.
And my question to you is, do you think that they... purpose of this is so that there's some sort of spiritual or energetic bond between the Earth Mother and the hybrid being?
I would suspect that is true, that the Earth Mother knows this is her fetus, that there is this bond. And after the fetus grows to the point where it can survive outside of the artificial womb on the craft in this cylinder, then the fetus is handed to the Earth Mother, and the Earth Mother is encouraged to hold it, to cuddle it, to nurse it, and also this happens to Earth Fathers as well.
At the fetus stage?
No, no.
The infant?
At the infant stage.
Yes. So after
it's... after it's taken out of the tube.
I'm confused here. So are you saying that the infant is the fetus is re-implanted and the mother is, the children that are being born are hybrids? Or are you saying that then they gestate the fetus and then they're taken away again? I'm not clear here.
Okay. In that part of the conversation, I was saying that they gestate the fetus on the craft, and when it reaches the stage where it can survive outside of the gestational sac, it is then taken out, and it is now a newborn baby. And that baby grows on the craft, and the mother, the Earth Mother, is brought back to hold that baby, to bond with that baby, to nurse that baby, and the Earth Father is as well.
That is some heavy stuff. Do any of these people, or Denise particularly in the book, does she go on to explain to you what her understanding is of the role that she is supposed to play in this greater scheme?
She only knows that she has been used as a breeder and was used for that purpose for many, many years. She thinks that something positive is meant to come out of all of this, and she senses a feeling of love coming from these beings.
That's encouraging.
Yes.
Because the idea that they are deliberately bringing these mothers back on the craft, deliberately putting them into a situation where they can bond, where they can identify and bond, indicates that they are capable of understanding a different kind of connection than what we've been told, that they're very mechanical and they're only collecting seed, etc. Obviously, there is something more here.
Yes, we know that a human infant cannot thrive and develop normally, particularly emotionally, without that kind of human contact, without that bonding, without the touching, without the words. And I believe that the ETs recognize how important it is for this to occur, for a child to develop normally.
But certainly one encounter of recognition is not enough.
Oh, they're brought back over and over again. It is not just one encounter. And we hear about the human teaching the ETs and the hybrids how to do this, the mature hybrids, who then work with the babies and hold them on a regular basis on this craft. So it's not as if the human is doing this just once and maybe brought back, you know, 2 weeks later to do it one more time. The human is teaching this to the others.
And does Denise have this recollection of being several times back on the craft and caring for this infant?
That isn't something that we have explored. I wanted to focus primarily upon the evidence, upon the missing time events that Denise had, and then gave her free rein to write about her own experiences as well.
What is the most, unfortunately, believe it or not, we are almost at the end of the hour, the most compelling, in 50 words or less, the most compelling aspect that you bring forward in this new book?
Boy, I don't know if there's just one compelling aspect.
Most compelling.
It's the maybe the scientific explanation for the aliens technology. I've discussed this with some theoretical physicists, and for me personally, I find it fascinating because I tend to go toward the scientific side of all of this.
Well, there's certainly plenty of that information in the book and honorably represented, but there's also the emotional, there's the direct experience from Denise. It's a very wonderful addition to your growing collection of works. And for the people that have just tuned in, Noelle, if you just tuned in, you missed a great show. I've been talking with Kathleen Martin, who co-authored the book with Denise Stoner. The book is The Alien Abduction Files. And I'm going to leave a little tickler here. I'm also an experiencer, and I've never talked about my experience. So maybe you and I can talk about that and bring it forward.
Sounds great.
All right, everybody. You have been listening to Kathleen Martin. I just didn't even get a chance to scrape the surface here. So you'll come back, won't you?
I would love to come back. Yes.
Okay. We'll come when we bring you back in as soon as possible. I've got Stanton Freeman coming on in a few weeks too, and we'll go back into what you are interested in talking about, which I believe is the lost time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That is correct.
Okay. So we will Shanghai Kathleen to come back on Beyond the Matrix, and soon as possible, and you can get more information about that. I would love to know your experience of this conversation, because surely talking about hybrids is outside the box of convention. So please send your comments and your questions to me at info@syrianrevelations.net. And don't forget that you can find out about Kathleen I'm looking for your website here. Kathleen-Marden, is that right?
That is correct. M-A-R-D-E-N. Kathleen with a K.
Kathleen with a K, -Marden.com. And she generously also gives out her personal contact, which is kmarden@aol.com. Investigate this woman. She's got her finger on the pulse. She's got years and years of research, history of personal experience, and she is the niece of the famed Betty Hill, of the Betty and Barney Hill UFO abduction. All right, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Next week, remember, I've got the rotating times. So next week, I'll be coming to you at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which is 6 a.m. in Rome. And I will be in the Azores. It's going to be 4 a.m. So be prepared for a very coffee drip. Patricia, to bring you forward on Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you, implores you to think outside the box of convention. And remember, mainstream media is not going to tell you the truth. So please support your alternative media people like me and so many others who dare to step outside the rules, who dare to bring you the truth as we understand it, who dare to bring you people like Kathleen, who are working hard to help the human race understand what's going on in this time of immense transition. This is Patricia Corey. I'm signing out. Neener, neener.